Today, we welcome an extraordinary voice from Lebanon, a woman whose life story speaks of war, purpose, justice, and the deep resilience she refuses to be labeled by.
You do me harm when you call me resilient. It means that you agree to my hardship. I don't want to be resilient. I deserve to have a proper life.
Shireen Jurdi is a global advocate for women, peace, and security, a global bridge builder committed to dismantling the very systems that deny women agency and silence the communities in conflict zones.
With my privilegedness, I want to do an impact. It's not tokenism. It's a what you do in life that can make really an impact on your community.
From surviving the Israeli invasion as a child to becoming the president of the Lebanese section of Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, Shireen has turned pain into purpose and displacement into dialogue.
We love life. We want to live in peace, a just peace, which is centered as a human rights approach, away from fear.
Her message is not just a call. It's a cause, a call for collective solidarity, for new narratives, for listening deeply.
Don't look at me as a victim. Look at me as a leader. Look at me as your sister.
This episode is an invitation to see, to hear, and to stand with women like Shireen, not as recipients of change, but as the change itself. Welcome to Women as Agents of Change with Shireen Jurdi. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Women of Agents of Change podcast series. I am your host, Lisa Florida. And today, your podcast is brought to you by 8 Billion Podcasts in partnership with the International Peace Bureau. And today, I have a very special guest from Lebanon, Shireen Jurdi. So, Shireen, welcome to the podcast. Thank you so much for being on here. How are you doing today?
Thank you, Lisa. I'm doing well. I'm doing actually excellent. And thank you so much for having me on your podcast.
No, it's really been an honor and pleasure to be able to interview these incredible women. And so what I'd like to do, Shireen, I just want to let the audience know that we previously have met. And so that's why I'm able to jump into a lot of these questions. But for the audience, Shireen, that's new to either the International Peace Bureau because they come from 8 billion or vice versa. Could you tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Yes, I'm Shireen Jurdi, Lebanese. I was born in Saudi Arabia because my parents used to live there for their work. And now I'm based in Lebanon. I work on issues pertaining to women, peace and security, youth peace and security. And I like to work, and actually this is what I do. I like to work away from silos. And I work on the nexus between the different agendas and especially highlighting disarmament and climate nexus, which we have been witnessing in our region for the past couple of decades.
Thank you so much. You know, the reason that I asked for you to give a little brief history about yourself, I get a chance to get to know these women on a different level prior to the podcast interview. And Shireen and I did share some stories of probably when she was like younger. You know, Shireen, let me go ahead and just jump into some of these. You've spoken about a message in your life since childhood. How did your personal experience during the 1982 Israeli invasion shape your sense of purpose?
Yeah, during that time, I remember I was a child. And for a child to live occupation is horrible. For a child to live shelling is horrible. For a child to lose one's home is terrible. So you tend to lose this connection between your present and the dreams that you had as a child. So I think it framed a part of my personality, and it framed some of the things that I think about and I try to work on. And that's why, like, I think, and I do work away from silos, because this is the life that we have. It's not something we choose. it's a life that was imposed on us from a colonial, patriarchal perspective.
Shireen, can you share with me how Lebanon's colonial and sectarian history has shaped current political system and how that affects women today?
Yeah. Actually, the Lebanese political architecture is a legacy of colonialism. We were under a French mandate after the World War One, and the engineering of this patriarchal colonial mandate had the national pact in 1943 upon Lebanon's independence. And even after the war, we had the Taif Agreement in 1989. Both of them have the patriarchal structures embedded within how they see Lebanon as a state, where the male allegiance is not to citizenship, whereas it's to communal belonging, and which prioritizes communal, and this is definitely at the expense of citizenship. And when we talk, it's at the expense of citizenship, then it's also at the expense of individuals, and hence women are one of those who are badly impacted by the inequality that the communal representation have within these colonial structures.
And so how has the political and confessional system in Lebanon acted as both a barrier and battleground for gender equality?
Yeah, the confessional political system has gatekeepers, and gatekeepers are mainly sectarian leaders within their communities, which prefers and prioritizes men over women. And we see the agency of women is stripped off when we're talking about how the patriarchal systems and the communal systems work on. Unfortunately, women are marginalized and their political voice is even at times not heard because of the system and how the system marginalizes a population at large, but I would say women in particular.
Women in particular. And you mentioned that Lebanon is often viewed as progressive for women in the region. How does this perception differ from the lived realities on the ground?
Yeah, there's a huge difference. Exactly. Like in the region, Lebanese women are considered among the most progressive. And even at times, I can see and hear women from the region saying, oh, no, Lebanese women are the more progressive. But when we look at the personal status law and we see the inequality among women themselves, and even among women and men within their own communities, we see there's a huge inequality. And this is because of the structure. This political system actually puts this inequality embedded in its system.
And so that's how the women, you see the, Shireen, when you and I talked, you said that women, most especially in Lebanon, seem to be the most progressive in the Arab nations, right? We were talking about that. Yeah.
Maybe it's there's a difference maybe we need to highlight.
Sure.
So maybe the issue of mobility, the issue of dress code, the issue of education, what kind of education you're having. But these, by and of itself, they do not offer you equality. They can be the indicators or the ingredients towards equality, but you have to work hard to get your equality. It's not a right that is given to you because of this. But with laws, this is where the inequality happens. And unfortunately, with the personal status law, with the even the electoral law, though it does not have inequality within its pillars, but still within the implementation, it does.
It does. And so would you like to actually expand on that? Because you're saying it's, what you're talking about is there's a difference. For purposes of the audience, could you expand a little bit more on that?
So within Lebanon, but not only Lebanon, at the regional level, we see there are lots of inequalities to women in terms of the personal status law, in terms of the political participation, whether at the parliamentarian level, executive or judiciary. And it's not related to the percentage of education that women has as per men, but it's mostly to the normative approach, to a social, traditional, cultural way where we see like men, unfortunately, getting these higher positions, administrative, decision-making level, other than women. And we can see it vividly in different spaces, not only in Lebanon. This is what I'm saying. It's not only a Lebanese thing, but what how you see it like differently in Lebanon, because you see the percentage of Lebanese women to Lebanese men, for example, in demography. You see like the percentage of education, the percentage of women, for example, voting. And still, when you look at the percentage of women who are actually in decision making, then you see like there's a huge gap. And then there should be like some kind of a research, but still there are lots of research on what are the causes of this gap between actually what you have and what you get in terms of decision making and political participation. I'm not talking about tokenism. I'm talking about meaningful, full engagement and participation.
All right. No, thanks for that clarification, Shireen. I know that there's so many things that you've done on this level, and so I just needed a reference to expand a little bit more so that we have reference to this. Now, you know, Shireen, here's where I'm able to relate. I journal and write quite a bit, and yet I do it as an adult and it helps me as it's very therapeutic. But it is very telling of, you know, your history, and what you're saying is children, they lose that, most especially in areas that are war-torn or conflict areas. This is what we need to bring to the table, is that a lot of the things that our children around the world really get to do, many do not in these conflict and war-torn areas. And that's what you're saying, is it's something you probably want to unpack, and I encourage you to do so as far as storytelling, because it is something that can be very healing. So thank you, though, for sharing that part of your childhood, because it is something that one of the things that I always encourage is to really go back to all of that. But as women, here we're called to do so much work. So, you know, Shireen, I encourage you to really go back and probably something a part of that could be, sorry, I'm losing my train of thought. That can be very healing for you, and not only for you, but for many women and children.
Yeah, you know, but Lisa, and now talking about childhood, talking about children, I feel like I cannot even now think about myself. I'm just like, as you're talking also, and I'm unable to reflect on myself because I'm thinking about the children in Palestine now. So I'm thinking how these children are living these daily oppressions of occupation, of genocide, of continued depriving their lives, that in their lives, their childhood. I mean, they're trying to fetch for water, eating the sand. I mean, I feel even like as a child myself, maybe giving the context of the present day warfare, maybe at that time it was more privileged. I would like to say privileged even. To use this word, given the fact of what is happening nowadays and the suffering of these children, just imagine like now how many millions later on, like in 10 years, 20 years, Lisa, hopefully when you will still be having women as agents of change and yes, the women's voices, how you're amplifying the voices. When you talk to these children who will become the green agents for the future, how they will reflect on it. Let's see how things will be.
Because I don't know. You know, Shireen, I don't know why I'm getting so emotional. I think I'm just going to tell the audience too. When Shireen and I first met 2 months ago, because this is quite a podcast series to prepare for, the world looked much different. I mean, well, not much different, but there is a series of events, everything from, you know, Israel and Iran broke out. And yet, it's so hard to address because all these women are taking a stand with their voice, and we're asked to go in so many places and do so many things so our voices can be heard. But we're really championing for the future of our planet, for humanity, for the children. And that's what I'm saying, Shireen. These children don't have basic human needs, let alone be able to have anything to write about. Because it's much different. And so this is the call out to the audience right now to really speak from, to share a woman's story, you know, who grew up in war-torn countries. In fact, you were even saying you don't plan anymore. You have this fear of planning due to war. Could you share a little bit more about that, Shireen?
Yeah, that's another scary thing. The minute I plan, we have war. And it's happening, like, every time I do this planning. And, you know, like, it's a trauma, it's a phobia. So when I have the pen and I'm writing things down to make sure that I'm doing the proper planning with the pen, you know, like, it's the pen and the paper. And then there's a word. So I would rather, so I try to, to move around, you know, and to move around with things. So I try to plan one thing on the computer, plan another thing on the paper, but I know that I'm relating to them, but I don't dare to put them together. And it's happening. So it's not something that is not happening. Every time I have the whole plan, it's impossible. So I don't actually do it because you have to restructure it of the word. Mm-hmm. And it's always about war and Israeli bombardment of Lebanon. It's always the case. So no planning for me.
Thank you so much for sharing that, because I know it takes quite an extraordinary woman to really champion for these, you know, for these initiatives, or we don't even want to call them initiatives, right, anymore.
Thank you, Lisa. You know, this is not a life that we choose. It's a life that we need to work upon, a life that we need to follow. And I want here also to say one thing. I want to say that also I'm privileged. I'm able, like, to have certain spaces. I'm able, like, to have a family. I'm able to have a home. I had a good education. I have proper networking. But there are lots of people in these conflict areas that are less privileged. Correct. So we need also to take this into account. And we need also to think in an intersectional approach, in the sense there are lots of women, there are lots of children who are maimed because of the war. They've lost their hands, they've lost their feet, they've lost their organs, they've lost their families, they've lost their loved ones. So there are lots of connections between different things that can help us. So I feel out of my position. That's why, like, I feel I'm with my privilegedness. I want to do an impact, and I want to be the voices, not of those of the voiceless, because I want them to be the voices of their own cases. But I need to be talking with in the places that I'm able to, and I need to make an impactful life. It's not tokenism. It's not tokenism at all. And that's why, like, for me, it's not about project.
Correct.
It's about what you do in life that can make really an impact on your community. Lately, I'm calling myself a glocal, because it's not only about these international organizations or international agendas, but it's definitely, these are very important agendas for me. Like, I work on the women, peace and security, the youth, peace and security, the disarmament agenda. I'm not a climate expert, but I link disarmament to climate. Otherwise, like, it doesn't make sense. So, and to the expenditure, to the economy, and to the cycle of the human security. But for me, like, it's, there's no other choice. We need to highlight these, and we need to make the connection, and we need to talk about not only the suffering, we're not only the survivors, but we are also, we have a voice, and we're trying in different spaces. It's not our fault. It's not our fault. We are not the ones who are sending the weapons.
Correct.
We are not the ones who have the main decision-making in the world.
Absolutely. You know, it's interesting that you talk about this, Shireen. You know, you're saying that you're, you know, we have our expertise. Mine comes from really business, to be honest with you. I might have actually mentioned that in a previous episode. But you're talking about climate change and you know, disarmament. It's just like me in this space. I didn't have the understanding when I actually came and interviewed a lot of these women. But now, due to the exposure and to getting to know many of you, I now more than ever, I'm shifting my business ideas to being able to help the women, because what you're talking about, right, is the larger agencies like the United Nations, sometimes they at the very forefront, they're dealing with a lot of global things, but they forget. And that's what you're saying, is we're trying to move towards grassroots, or it works more at grassroots. I know we're wanting to cover this. I'll get to that, Shireen. But yes, I'm letting the audience know that because of these women, I've now shifted a lot of my business ideas towards helping these different communities and more of these grassroots efforts. So going back to that, Shireen, you've always said that you resist the label resilience when it applies to women in conflict zones. And what alternative framing do you believe is more just?
Yeah, and after the port explosion, it was like Lebanese women are resilient, like as if they're celebrating our sufferings, as if it's celebrating the mode of life that we need to endure all these challenges that we have. Whereas what needs to be raised is the violence, the inequality, the hardness of life, not because of only our system, but because also of how the international global system is operating. So as if like what we need to call off is like how to raise the justice, how to raise like collective solidarity. So it's, for me, you do me harm when you call me resilient. You do me harm. It means that you agree to my hardship. It means that agree to my waiting for electricity. Like I had before, like speaking to you, like if you could see, like I'm sweating because we don't have proper electricity. So it's about electricity. It's about water. It's about like finding a space. So our basic needs are actually the things that we try to find in life. This is just like as a start. So by calling resilient, this is, I think this is the first road to injustice that unfortunately most, even like it's, some projects are called resilient. Sometimes I laugh. So you're very happy. You're proud of this, the resilient.
No, yeah.
So what is like what you're ignoring, mere fact, you're ignoring my suffering.
Yeah, that's very powerful.
I would really like stop. This is a quote that I've always have, and I always say it. And they know Shireen is equivalent to no resilience. So I'd really like to ask everybody to reflect on this. And please stop calling us resilient.
It's very powerful, Shireen. Thank you so much for actually sharing that, because it isn't about resilience. Like, why should we have to be resilient?
Why? I mean, I deserve to have a proper life. Not what, why I'm resilient, why you are like putting me, where like you're labeling me as resilient. I don't want to be resilient. I do not want to be resilient.
Yes, that's definitely something for all of us to really reflect on. So, Shireen, what do women in conflict-affected areas in Lebanon really need right now?
For me, we have, so you need to look at a long time of a history of civil war, of Israeli occupation, of constant war with Israel. So what women need is you need to listen to these women, to listen to their priorities. And in conflict areas, priorities are not static. So our lives changes, and accordingly also like the challenges, the opportunities, what is needed also is changing. So what we first need, and that was one of the results that I discovered firsthand during the webinars that I had during the first month of the war last year in September, which is safety. We had like the Women Peace Tables. It was a project of Wolf Lebanon and Peace Women across the globe. So what was clear and outstanding is that women need safety, women need dignity, and women need to be looked at as urgent, as agents of change. So we need to listen to them as having the knowledge. And, you know, at times for me, even like when women participate in different programs, projects, they have the knowledge. You need to appreciate this knowledge.
Absolutely. You know, Shireen, one of the things that we were talking about previously is, you know, we, especially when you're coming from this subject area, you know, one of the things we talked about too was, can you reflect on how the war has impacted children in your life? You did talk about the story about your nephew's heartbreaking realization that they don't care. So maybe you could share this brief story with the audience, but let's talk about how the war has impacted children.
Yeah. You know, like my nephew, he was 12 and then 13, and now he's 14. He was actually, you know, like during the port explosion, maybe he was 10 or he was 9. And then with the war on Palestine, though, like at his home, they don't watch much news. But now with the social media, it's obvious and it's clear to everybody, like even children can see the news and watch it on TikTok and Instagram and other platforms. So I was talking, and then the war started in Lebanon, and I told him, don't be scared, because he could hear like on a daily basis the Amka, because it has a terrible nervous-wracking sounds. And then they hear about the children being killed in Palestine on a daily basis. So I was shocked when I told him, don't be scared, you will be safe. And he said, no, because they don't care. And I could never forget this. They don't care. And I told him, who they? He said, everybody. Everybody is watching the news as if it's a movie. Everybody knows what is happening in Palestine and in Lebanon. And he saw me like busy writing a statement. And he told me, why come join us for lunch? And I said, I'm busy. I need to finish this. And he asked me, what are you doing? And I said, I'm writing a statement. He told me, do you expect this to end the war? And I did not have the answer. I tried to say, like, yes, this can help end the war. He said, it could have ended then long time ago, because I see you writing all the time. This could not end the war. People are watching and they don't care. So this issue of neglect, when it's embedded in children's way of thinking, what kind of injustice these children are feeling, and how can you bring back the trust to these children? How can you bring it back? Like, For us, as grown-ups, we talk about double standards. We talk about the veto power. We talk about all these member states who have the power, the economical, the nuclear, the arms industry. But when you talk to children, how can you explain this double standards? Or how can you explain the difference in terms of humanity? Like, you are more human than I am? No, you're not.
No, absolutely. Shireen, that's what I'm saying is these children are affected at such a young age, especially when we reference back to you. You talked about how you did storytelling or you did writing a lot when you were younger. And yet your nephew at maybe 10, 11 years old, he's already saying they don't care. They are watching like it's a movie, you know? And that's just imagine the psychology behind that for them. Him to already start thinking that at such a young age. Like, where are we going to start making this change? You know? And it does. Feels like it's quite a journey.
Yeah. I think we need to rehumanize our policies and to have also these children as center, like their dignity, the way put forward. I remembered one thing, Lisa, I would like to share. We were, before the war, and the genocide in Gaza and the latest war in Lebanon. We have beautiful beaches in the south of Lebanon. It's a beautiful beach and it's just like meters away from these areas that were once Palestine. He told me, where is Palestine? I told him, you don't look, it's just, you can see it. And I told him, it's over there and the other part is to the other side, which we cannot see. And he told me, too bad, Palestinians cannot enjoy their land. And I said, why? He told me, they're busy fighting for their rights. Oh, my God. Like, I never talked to him. And so children, so maybe if we even, had a discussion with the children, maybe we will going to get to know new things that we were not aware that these kids actually know or are thinking of.
Yeah.
I never talked about rights with him.
Yeah. No, that's that just gives a perfect example how they do know. And yet that's what we're trying to do is really protect them. We're trying to give them back the childhood that they had, that they really need to have. It's their human birthright to have a childhood. And yet they don't enjoy them, or they're experiencing this, I should say.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That I took with dignity away from fear.
Yes, absolutely. Now let's, Ms. Shireen, you mentioned even previously in this podcast, you said that women are treated as projects instead of people with causes. What does it mean to center? What does it mean to center women as agents rather than recipients of change?
We need to acknowledge and know that these women have the knowledge. They know exactly what they're talking about. And once we consult with them, it means we're working on the knowledge that they have, and we should not distort their knowledge with the perspective that is not what they think of and what they live. Unfortunately, the North comes with pre-planned agendas. I'm not saying a conspiracy theory. I'm saying they have projects like resilience. Every time I talk about resilience, I feel like. So they come up with projects that actually at times is not the priority that these women want. And they take our lives and the things we work on as projects. But we're not projects-based. We are life. We are life. We are causes. We are a life that we live into, we're agents of change in our communities. That's why, I think the way that we put the knowledge of these women and how we take it into consideration in an inclusive and holistic approach is a key to the success.
Correct. Absolutely. I agree. That's why there's a whole podcast series on women as agents of change. Because we are a gift. and it's now time for us to really take a stand. I know you have been championing for women for many years, but I think that there's going to be a rising, Shireen, of a lot of women leaders, because this is the only way that the planet is going to change. So you're going to see a rising of these women coming up from every sector. And so
I believe so as well, because I believe that these young women, like in their 20s, early 20s, they have a new vision and they do not, like they're clear. They know what they want. They refuse to be resilient and they refuse to be just taken as tokenism. And they refuse to be led. They want to co-create. And this is what we need. We need to co-create the agendas together. We need to co-create the vision that we need ahead. Maybe we lack some of the expertise. We need to learn. We learn. But it's not that we have like a completely new vision that is not ours, because this will fail. And with also, it will create a gap between us and between the communities. What we need is we need to align how we want to work together. And within our communities, it's very important to keep cultures, traditions intact. So maybe we move slowly to what is decent, to what is acceptable to communities, and also to what is also progressive in the sense of the agency and leadership of not only women, of women, young women, elderly, men, of all the components of the communities. We need to work hand in hand. And I think one of the things that unfortunately these projects also had is that once you tend to focus just on women, excluding men, then you're creating another gap.
True.
Because these men are actually unaware of what you're talking about. So these women come back with the new ideas, and these men are still like in... So they have different mindset. So this is where the mindset is imbalanced. But you need to have everybody. These agendas are for everybody. Equality is for everybody.
I absolutely agree. I was like, we get it, Shireen. Like, I know that we've always been championing for equality with women. And now you have this younger generation who doesn't even see the separation. So there's definitely, I don't even think it's going to be very long before we have to really, what you're saying, is co-create some new ideas and bring this into alignment and balance. And I think that in a short period of time, you're going to start seeing this, because the children and the younger generation are speaking out. They're really, sometimes it's us, it's in our age range through what we've had to battle through to speak our voice. So, thank you for sharing that vision. That's definitely going to be something that's really progressive.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. I think we're going to learn also lots of them. For example, like co-launched a young women plus leadership network it was supposed to be just for young Lebanese women. But I thought, no. Once you're talking about young, you need to include men. Actually, like even in all the trainings that I lead on the women, peace and security, I always include men. You need to have everybody in the room. You need to have everyone. So for this youth network, I thought if we really want to make the change, then it needs to be inclusive of young men, young women, and at the same time also to include Lebanese, but also Palestinians and Syrian refugees, because they're both in Lebanon. So you cannot have just Lebanese young women and men, whereas like you need also to see how you can bring these linkages between the different components of the communities. I'm not talking about naturalization or nationality giving. Like, I'm just talking about because they're living in here, and we need to understand, we need to know about each other. We need to know if there's like a conflict or a crisis, how we can together try to approach it in a holistic approach so that we can do like the early warning, do the conflict prevention. If we don't understand each other, if we don't have these bridges together, we will not be able to.
Yes, no, that's really a great point that you're making. And honestly, I mean, like I said, it really is a progressive, these are progressive ideas and progressive moves, but I don't think we're going to be very far from achieving that. Now, what could you say, Shireen, is your perspective on agencies within donor mechanisms, and where do they fall short of truly empowering grassroots women?
Maybe it's about definite agency thing. It's about the narrative. Who owns the narrative? How you build on this narrative? How you listen? How you prioritize things? How you also how you reshare or redistribute the resources? How you co-create things from the processes, not in just the implementation? So we need to rethink. We need to stop taking away a step back, actually two steps back, not only one step back. We need to take two steps back, listen. So if things are not working, why is it not working? Do we expect to have the same input and to have a different result?
Correct.
That's why we need to change the whole way that we're thinking. And that's why we need to have very good relationship with a global north, global south, among us, like in global south, us with the global north, with the allies, how the allies can help us and support us in creating these new collaborations, partnerships, networks. Our voices matter. Don't speak on my behalf. Let me speak.
Yeah,
listen to me. Listen to me. And one thing, Lisa, maybe this is something we have felt during the genocide in Gaza, but also during the war on Lebanon. I remember once we like had solidarity messages, we felt loved. We felt, maybe you say like how emotional is the word loved in this sense, but you feel like with everything around, with these sonic bombs, like I was doing this women peace tables, sitting here on the same desk, but having sonic bombs, like times like I'm screaming because like there's a sonic bomb and you hear all these voices, you hear this AMCA, just a sometimes like even you cannot sleep at times, like you just feel like, how can I stop this? So with all of this, these small messages of solidarity makes you like really endure that pain. And then you're resilient.
The one word you don't want to eat is.
But you know, during the war, I felt this, you know, they are right. We are resilient because we're enduring the pain.
So, right. But you know, that's what I'm saying, Shireen. Like, why do we have to? You know what I mean? Like, why? It really changes your physical frequency. I can imagine the psychology between hearing that. But here's another thing. That's what you're saying. Once we band together in solidarity, love is a frequency that shifts everything. And I only say this, though, Shireen, too, because I'm interviewing the other groups, you know, referencing to the students of Serbia. And that's what the ladies were saying. They said, there's something so different when you're amongst the people and you're protesting. It trumps all of the emotions that you feel because you're coming together. You're seeing no barriers between anyone because at the very core, we're human beings.
Yeah, you know, like I used to go to social media to see if Lebanon is trending, to look at all these international women organizations, to look at the peace organizations, to look at what they're writing on their social media platforms about the wars in different parts of the world. But during the war in Lebanon, in particular, these 2-month war that we had, And now when I see like all these, by the way, though, there is a ceasefire agreement, but actually there is no ceasefire in actual practice. We have daily violations of this ceasefire. But what I wanted to say is that once you see and read and listen to this advocacy or like championing or like asking to cease fire, asking to stop militarization, asking to stop sending weapons to Israel, all these messages feel like make you feel a bit of, I will not say safety, but I will say like caressing you, yeah, that nobody is there for you. You are the one who is under the, like you're being bombarded. Like, how can I speak when I'm like under the rebels?
Correct.
When I'm like asking for my safety, I'm asking for my life. How can I still, and I tell them, please be, talk to the world. Ask every, all these companies that are sending weapons, go demonstrate peacefully on these decks, stop sending weapons, ask your states, like, please don't veto ceasefire. And this is like the work that we want to do and we need to amplify. But unfortunately, we did not see the collective solidarity. We see like individual solidarities here and there. We're still unable to come up with this collective way of how all these organizations, like I'm in different groups and I tried like to make them come together. I cannot make an impact these are meeting on Monday and these are meeting on Tuesday and this is having this message and this is having another message. We cannot have an impact. We need to solidify because we are many, maybe we are not, but we're not in the decision-making, just as women are not in decision-making spaces. We, the people who are asking for justice, we are not in decision-making spaces. We are not a critical mass to make that change.
Oh, that's very telling. But honestly, Shireen, it is. I mean, honestly, we're walking into this world and we're talking about it. Like we were saying, let's shift this. And if it's not going to be, it's going to be interesting to see how this all unfolds being on Wednesday. So Shireen, as president of WILPF, that was quite a Lebanon and a local women's organization. How do you balance local needs with global agendas like women, peace, and security?
Yeah, thank you for this. So I'm the president of the section in Lebanon of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, which is one of the oldest women's organization, WILF Lebanon. So definitely this is what I'm talking about. Like, there are international agendas that you need to work in and to try to see what is happening at the local level, because the priorities and needs at the local level are different from the global perspectives when you talk about peace and security. So there are things how you localize it. And I'm also the president of Shuifat Women's League, which is Rabita Tzayret Shuifat. It's one of the also the oldest women's organization in Lebanon. We have different frameworks. In Rabta Tzayedet Shuifat, we do socio-economic support for women-led families. We try to support the communities, the education. So the agenda, the priorities and needs at the local level are different from the work that I do in WILF. But still, I try also to link, like we're creating now, as per donation and funding by WILF Norway section, we're now having the mediation unit institutionalized in Shuifat with the support of WILF, but also of Rabita Tzayedet Shuifat as the local women organization. So we're trying to do this kind of support to the local frameworks that I was telling you about. So how you see the local needs, how you can take from these international agendas for the local needs, and what actually are the local needs. and how you frame it within the local perspectives as well. So it's a very thin line, and you need to be mindful of things. But I think I'm really humbled and privileged to be in this space.
Thank you for that, Shireen. What role can women play in post-conflict mediation, particularly in border areas like South Lebanon?
I'm a member of the Women's Local Mediators Network in the south of Lebanon, Marja Ayoun Hasbaya. So also for me and my colleagues, my vision is that it's not only about things that you can work on without agency, but I feel like there are lots of roles that women can play in the rebuilding phase. How we can have it more as gender sensitive, how we can have like even the spaces that will be built in a feminist friendly approach, how we can have the policies that we have in these spaces, especially when we talk about negotiation, when we talk about ceasefire, how we can have elements that include women. We have seen like in the negotiations and in the ceasefire monitoring unit that is now in the south of Lebanon, we don't see women. So how can we have women? How we can have women needs as per these discussions? It's not present yet, but these are some of the things that we are asking for.
You mentioned shifting a project on small arms due to the outbreak of the war. What does that moment say about the need or adaptive and context-specific strategies?
Yeah, this is also another thing. When you work with the women in conflict, things can change and you need to be adaptive and you need to act also promptly. What we did is that we were about to be implementing a project on small arms, light weapons, and the implications that it has on gender-based violence and the connection with the women, peace, and security. And as we were starting to do this, we were faced with the war. The war started. And we asked our partners, peace women across the globe, that we need to shift it. They were very considerate. They listened to our demands, because I said, like, with the big bombs, we cannot talk about small arms. And that's why we shifted the project to have it as women peace tables. Just let me tell you one thing. One of these meetings in the women peace tables was in person. It was one in-person meeting because of the war. We could not move. So in that meeting, I was surprised to know, because we have also like one mural on 1325. One of the questions was to these women who were displaced, what is it that gives them hope? How did they see peace? And I was very happy to know that a mural that I had previously in the work of localization that I had on 1325 and the Women, Peace and Security was that what was written on that wall as per the mural, women, peace and security, was the thing that brought them hope that there is peace, that there will be peace and there will be security with the work that women does. So that was really like to see how you tend to just do the proper work, even if you need to adjust things, to look at it from another perspective. Just do the proper thing. And that's why, like, I would like to ask also here, like, the donor communities, don't just focus on pictures. Don't just focus on reports. Don't just focus on you need to implement this by this deadline, because you never know how things will change. Just let us make an impact. The most important thing is to make the impact. Not to waste money.
Yes, it is. Shireen, it is the small things that make the biggest impact. And I'm glad that the messages that you put out and who you're being around these women is already creating something different and giving them hope. But let's really change the world. Let's not have to worry about war conflicts with what we're dealing with right now. Let's shift it in the little things that we do. Now, Shireen, we're coming to that point where this is going to give you an opportunity as women, as a fellow woman agent of change. What message do you want to convey to the international audiences about women in Lebanon and conflict zones?
Yeah, I would like to say that we love life. We want to live in peace, in a just peace, which is centered as a human rights approach, which is centered as the right to live away from fear, away from want. And we need to have the dialogue together. We need to see like how me as a person, I'm impacted by certain decisions that your country does, and how you need to understand me and to listen to me. And I also need to understand you and your point of view and the context that you're living on, and how we can make this bridge so that we together, you can see the pain that I have and try to see like how we can end this by either talking to the representatives in your governments, how you're going to raise the issue of inclusivity, how you're going to end the root causes of conflict through the collective solidarity that you can have with like-minded and with the allies, how we can create this alignment between us as a push and pull factor of this areas that have wars and those areas that do not have war, but actually who are one reason or another of the war that I have in my country.
And how can we build truly sustainable, peaceful societies led by women and rooted in justice and care?
This is what we need. We need this. And we need to have it through partnerships. We need to have it with dialogue. We need to have it with the spaces that we can talk to each other, where we can understand the pain and we trust. We need to have also that trust. And I think what we need also to have, we need to know and acknowledge that we did not do our whole homework. So there are lots of things that we still can do. So when we reach to each other, I think this is what we need. Like this podcast, Lisa, which will reach many. This is one of the things that we need to have. We need to listen more to each other, and we need to see how to support each other. And we need to change the narratives. We need to be aware of the terminologies that we use and do no harm. And leave no one behind as well.
No, absolutely. You know, Shireen, for some reason, I feel very emotional right now, most especially throughout this podcast. There's a level of other emotions that I'm processing that's emerging from me. And I think specifically because of this time that we were doing the podcast, most of the other podcasts were pre-recorded prior to all the conflict that was happening globally. And so we have an opportunity as sisters, as women here right now, with this podcast being actually recorded in July, to really send out this message to the audience, to really say, let's listen, let's align, let's really do our homework, like what you're saying. But with that, you know, in a world saturated with data, images, and reports, why is it critical to return to the human voice and heart in storytelling?
Yeah, we need to. We need to listen to each other. We need to have the storytelling, and we need to have the audience. Don't look at me as a victim. Look at me as a leader. look at me as an agent of change. Look at me as your sister, your sisterhood for this world, for this globe, for the goodness of this globe.
So Shireen, you know, thank you so much for the honor of being able to sit down with you. Shireen is a very busy woman, as many of these women on this series is, and for taking this time to really share with the audience what's actually happening currently, the history, and of course your life. So thank you so much for being a part of the Women as Agents of Change podcast series. I'd love to have you back, or I'd love to do an extension of this, maybe through 8 billion, or let's see how International Peace Bureau does with this podcast series. But again, thank you from the sincerest place of my heart for your contributions, not only to the women in Lebanon, but to all the women globally.
Thank you, Lisa, for having me. And thanks for this initiative. Definitely, it matters a lot to the women in this world.
Thank you. Thank you to our audience for tuning in to this episode of Women as Agents of Change. We will see you on the next episode.